Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. Behind the curtain. Behind the curtain.
This is Behind the Curtain, and I'm Matt Schulte. Each episode, I have a conversation with someone in the world of storytelling. As I develop my own story, called The True History of Oz, I have two goals: to learn as much as I can about storytelling, and to share those learnings with other storytellers, no matter the medium they work in. My guest today is composer, producer, and musician Mark Orton. Mark was shortlisted for the Academy Award last year for his original score for the movie The Holdovers. And earlier this year, he and I collaborated on the score for The True History of Oz.
Thank you, Mark, for joining me.
This
podcast is about storytelling, and so I wanted to have you on because you work with storytellers, and then you take other folks' stories, and then you add another layer of storytelling through your music. And I've been lucky enough to work with you a couple of times on a couple of different projects. And so when I started working on The True History, I asked if you'd help me out, and you did, and we ended up with something great. But I wanted to start by asking, when you're working with the folks you're working with, mostly pretty experienced filmmakers, where do you start? Like, where do you start? You know, you're part of your job, or you tell me what you think your job is, but part of it is like, oh, this is the story. Here's what I need to add to add to the story. So, like, what's your, do you have, like, a thought process?
I mean, I do. I'd say that, you know, it varies a great deal, and it depends somewhat on the style of the director or in terms of where to bring music in to the process. So there are some folks that want it as early on as when you're just kind of in script mode, even as inspiration to finish the writing. That's less usual, but it does happen. I mean, normally music is kind of pushed into post-production after you've shot a film. And that's when you get working in earnest in almost all cases. But I actually really like getting brought in early, like maybe when it's just at the script level or the film's being shot. There's a lookbook or like a kind of mock-up made of the project. And even based on those early elements or based on the narrative or story, I'll begin writing a suite of pieces that we can then use to kind of seed the music, you know, before I get into writing like real explicitly for a scene and just shaping stuff around dialogue or cutting it down to the 37 seconds we need. I might write with these kind of broader strokes based on a narrative. And I feel like that's kind of what we did. You showed me some terrifying monkey images and a basic story line and some ideas about, I mean, obviously the story is shifts in your case. It's not as fixed a story. There's a story of the game itself and of the true history of Oz.
Oh, right.
We were also working with the role-playing side of it.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that could go any number of directions. But right. I think, you know, having your ideas and especially your imagery there, I think that's in some ways is sort of like working off of a script early on and you know, coming up with a musical palette that to me represents that narrative and that world.
Yeah.
And
I had the roughest sketch of some chord changes.
Yeah.
And that,
yeah, yeah.
And
lyrics too.
Lyrics, right. Which the lyrics don't occur now in our version, but they helped, they helped me anyway. With the kind of the mood and tone of the thing, mm-hmm. you know, like elements that just like with any film or piece of music, you don't always see in the final thing stuff that actually led to the final thing, you know,
right.
you don't hear those kind of things. One of the things that you did with the piece that we did for The True History is there was sort of a block of chords that we kind of, or you kind of messed around with. And at a certain point, we made the decision, you know, and you really advocated for, we need to break out of that chord. We need to break out of that in some way and go to something that was a little more score-y and a little less song-y so that we could really capture. And so is that a thing that you have to do often where you're like, I know you guys said this, but I think we need to go here? Or is it just a real push-pull on that?
You know, kind of thing? I think actually in some ways, because you're a songwriter too, and we've also worked together in that capacity, I think in the beginning, we both came in thinking, well, maybe we're going to arrange this song, you know, build in some elements that tie musically, like instrumentation-wise, to this world, you know, that makes sense for it. But then once we started doing that, it did kind of take on a life of its own, I'd say, and that's when I think I was pushing to bring it away from song structure and have the narrative structure line up more with the piece we were building and line up more with the imagery and tie it less to a song form, you know, rather than trying to kind of, it's not that you can't do that. And I love putting on my arranger's hat and kind of, and going for that. But I think, at some point maybe the song felt a little bit limiting compared to what I was seeing on screen or what we were discussing or some of the images, the concept. So I wanted it to kind of break away from that and get into something stranger and also something a little less predictable than like a straight, you know, a kind of singable song. Totally. I think that's also important for it because it's not such a safe, comfortable world.
Well, and not only that, but, you know, we were... at first, we were working with a real rough cut that actually changed quite a lot, you know.
Once
we kind of had that final version, it was pretty clear that there. I don't know how you would describe this. You tell me. But it's like there was very clearly not a song structure to the video. Now there was a real, you know, it much more cinematic where we're like we're building to this moment, which. You know, some great songs do that, but like there's a lot that was happening in the music that we ended up with, you know.
But yeah, but at the same time, and I'm not just trying to throw some nice comments back your way about the song, but the kind of elements of the song remained throughout. Yeah. In some ways, it's a little more like you're coming in for Harry Potter 3 as a composer. And you know you're going to have to incorporate some of those melodies in.
Yeah.
It's the world is established with that. I felt that about the song. We didn't blow it off or you know, it's still very much what the basis of the harmony, the basis of the mood of the thing. So if at any point in this video you had decided to switch gears into, you know, a music video or something, it would have fit right in. It was, it does feel of that world, but we did extend it out into more orchestral palette and also some unusual instrumentation, some of the weirder organic stuff.
Yeah. Was that kind of, just thinking back to when we were sort of not in the weeds, but we were like in the thick of it, trying to make some decisions. So, you know, and we know that the world of the true history of Oz, it's one that we sort of know, but we don't really. Like, we find out about it. And so when you were thinking about, like, palette, musical palette, were you definitely, or you, again, you tell me, like, okay, we need to find something familiar but strange, or we need to find, like, did you have, like, specific sort of, okay, we need to find this?
Yeah, but again, I think that comes down to, I mean, in some ways, there's a kind of expectation with the Oz story, and there is, you know, the old Oz story, and there certainly is bits of weirdness and darkness baked into that story.
1,000%,
You know, of course.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, with this concept, you're exploring some truly darker sides of it, and it's not that a song with a guitar and voice can't represent that. It certainly can, but the imagery, the you know, some of the narration that's in it, really it just felt like something broader, something bigger than just like a simpler song. And I think also the way it's shot, the way it's the way the color is, I don't know, there are things that just occur to me as a composer immediately, that because there's, you know, there are fantastical elements to it.
Yeah.
And so there are things that immediately occur where I want to do something similar musically. I don't want to just stick with, you know, a piano and strings, a simple instrumentation, while then both the narrative and the visuals are exploding out into something
pretty big. Yeah.
You know, pretty big and pretty, yeah. And also dark and darker, and yeah. It can turn surreal. And plus it's fun on my end to mess around with, you know, all these, I get the chance to bow my water phones and vibraphones and
yeah,
play my
own
that broken auto harps and all that. So
one of the things that, you know, probably gets you hired sometimes, is that you can, you know, you've got a very formal understanding
strong
of
strong chin. That's what it is.
You
really
got a strong chin. Yeah. Not as strong as mine, pal. But you, in addition to that, very, I don't want to say academic, but like, you know, all the things one should know as a score writer. You've also got this lots of different kinds of instrumentations, some of which is very unique to you personally, you know.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about that, like, you know, how you think about introducing that to stuff other kinds of projects.
Yeah, it's funny, I've actually had kind of the reverse of a lot of composers that way, who and it has a lot to do with the band that I used to have, Tin Hat Trio.
Yeah.
Because I did have this orchestral background with a conductor father, and I went to conservatories and all that. But then I actually kind of like cut my teeth, or the first half of my career was based on this group that, while it was this kind of chamber ensemble of violin, guitar, and accordion, we got into a lot of weird extended technique, and also a lot of kind of found and built instruments, old things sold door to door in the late 1800s that we would buy up and alter. We would prepare the guitar and the violin, you know, putting bolts and chains on the piano or silly putty. Likewise with the guitar, threading weird bits of wire through the strings, just looking for any way to kind of like take these sounds that you're used to, and sure, exploring those classic sounds of those instruments, but exploding them out. And that, I mean, that aesthetic in general, it does actually come from something more academic, just, it's just avant-garde academic. And that's what we were all really into.
Right, yeah.
And so then that band actually, like, you know, that was, it was getting licensed into film, into radio and podcast too, a lot. And that's kind of how I began my career. The funny thing is that that association was a kind of, what could I say, like a, it was like a kind of golden handcuff for me, where I couldn't escape it. And it was, everything had to have some accordion or some weird Ebo dobro or whatever, you know. And I actually was like, wait a second, you know, I write orchestral music too. I actually really love doing that. I love writing solo piano pieces. Anyway, so yeah, now I'm many years on in my career, and I kind of do both, but I'd say that, yeah, it helped. It's something I'm interested in. Also, just there's a visceral quality. So much of the music composing world, not to go off on total tangent, but so much of it is in the box. So much of it is digital, sampled or, you know, pre-recorded instruments, and the same kinds of sounds coming out of everyone. So I'm always looking for a way to build some performative stuff into it, whether it's me personally performing or bringing some players in that can do that. And the players that I'm interested in working with are players that are, they're very comfortable playing on the page. They probably have some conservatory training, but they're also comfortable improvising, playing off the page, and especially playing extended technique kind of stuff that really comes out of the avant-garde classical world.
Right.
That doesn't mean that I'm writing super dissonant, you know, atonal music for it. It could be very tuneful, but we're still exploring how far we can kind of explode out the sound of these instruments. So
yeah, you know, one of the, like, talking about like preparing the instruments for, you know, explain what that is for folks who don't know, because it sounds like, oh, you just, sure, you're preparing that, but it's an actual thing, that's an actual technique.
Yeah, well, the actually, so probably made famous first by, not that people didn't experiment with it all along, but John Cage, composer, is credited, I guess, with his prepared pianos. There are other people like Henry Cowell and some other composers that messed around inside the piano too. So for with a prepared piano, you're using, sometimes they're like set screws or little bolts, or they can be chains, or you know, like chains of ball bearings, all kinds of different stuff. You're putting them actually on the strings, and you're doing it at different, you can be very specific, you can be general with it, throw some chains down and there's a jangly piano for you. When you dig in, it stops sounding like a piano, starts sounding like some kind of strange percussion orchestra. But you can be very specific with it. You can put it perfectly in the middle of a string the way you would play a harmonic on a guitar, and split it in half and build an octave piano by just putting it in the right spot on the string.
Yeah.
You can mute the piano with, we use Silly Putty a lot because it's doesn't hurt the strings. But there are other things you can use too, just pieces of felt. It's just ways of kind of like, you have a piano and you, piano sound is great, but how else can we, you know, what else can we build from this?
Yeah.
And with all of those different sounds, you know, a piece of metal on a string versus a piece of wood versus some wire versus felt versus Silly Putty, those are all different sounds too. And so if you spend some time, you can really build this crazy percussion orchestra with, you know, 1,000 different sounds coming out of your piano suddenly. And you can do similar things to other instruments as well. Right. So similar with guitar and
Do you, when you're working with the filmmakers, do they ever come, like how often do the filmmakers come to you with really specific stuff that may or may not, like you may or may not think it's a good idea? Like how often does that kind of thing happen where you're like, well, okay, you know?
Yeah, I mean, definitely happens. You know, I work with filmmakers like you or like Alexander Payne, for instance, or I can think of several others who are musicians themselves. And so they might have like, you know, many more kind of specific ideas, yeah. Alexander's to the point where we're working on something and he says, is that a major seven chord? I don't think I like major seven chords, you know, I mean, he really is on that level. So in those cases, yes, they might have some specific ideas, and my job is to help realize their ideas. I mean, I'm not making a solo album with any of these things. And I'm very open to trying those things. I push back sometimes when I think, one thing I'm probably better at than most directors, at least, is hearing into the future of those ideas before I even put them down or play them. They may not be, but I'm kind of good at that. And so sometimes I know in advance this isn't going to work, and I go through the motions anyway to show them.
As quickly as you can.
Yeah, as quickly as I can. Yeah. Spend as little time as possible.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's also times where I've been surprised by it, you know, or some great ideas have come that way. It's a collaborative process.
As much
as composers are off in their little dungeons and working, it's still ultimately a very collaborative process. And I like that side of it. You know, I won't pretend that I don't like making a solo record now and again and being my own boss, but I also love the collaboration. That's why I do this.
So. Yeah. I didn't know that Alexander Payne was a musician. So that you did the score, you composed the score and produced it, I think, right? For The Holdovers?
Yeah.
You produced
co-produced it,
well?
with a music editor, my good friend, Richard Ford. And, and the soundtrack album as well. Yeah. Alexander has, he played cello. And he plays piano. He's like taking some jazz piano study like classes, and he has a strong musical background. He's really into film music. He actually just did a big presentation in Omaha, like a whole night of film music that he loves. So it's a thing for him. He is one where I'll get involved early and start writing a suite of pieces even before, you know, even before we're, well, there maybe they're, maybe the picture's getting edited at that point.
Was with the holdovers, I know that you were in early. Were you, is that one where you were in before they were even finished shooting or at this?
Yeah, they were, let's see, I was definitely brought in early, and we actually, the first time we got together, I just sort of wrote a suite of songs that to me felt like the era of the film was very specific with that film, to wanting to be very much of the era. He wanted it to feel like a film released at that time, not right. just a, and so, yeah, so we, I went, the first thing I did was go after a bunch of, you know, still with my own personality, but writing songs that felt like they could have been released similarly in like 1970.
Yeah.
And those songs, I would say about half of them made it into the film in some way or another, whether it was similar to your, our work together, where it was sort of like, well, the skeleton's there somewhere and it morphed into something totally different,
yeah.
or whether it was actually like legit the piece that I wrote. And then there's a few that are on the cutting room floor here, and that's also fine, and that's part of the process. So, yeah.
Are
yeah.
any of those things that, like, you think, whoa, that was a good one, Alexander? Why is that on the, you know?
Yeah, yeah. No, I think that in the end, the right decisions were made.
No, that's the right
it's
answer.
It's funny because, yeah, no, I think it's not, I'm not just saying that, you know, there's a lot of different directions you can go in 1970. There's a lot of different music getting produced then. There was some music just forms just starting out. And, you know, our joke was when it got into a certain 70s emotional thing, you would say, you're cruising for a gruisin', Dave Gruisin'. if it was tipping too much in that direction.
Right.
Yeah, so that was like, we were determining instrumentation. Are we leaning more Stevie Wonder or Bill Withers or, you know,
or what, England?
Subtle things, so.
Was there, did England Dan and John Ford Coley ever come up?
Actually, well, not specifically, but that's a good, no, I'd say, you know, honestly, what came up a lot was Carole King.
Oh, yeah.
Which, you know, which I'm a tremendous fan.
Yeah.
And you know, he had a lot of music, he had a lot of source music songs in the film as well. And I wanted my music to play nice with that side.
Yeah, there's not any Carole King in the movie, is there?
There's not. Yeah. No, there's not. But there's all manner of, you know.
Yeah, there's a lot of different stuff. I haven't heard you bring up Carole King in relation to that, but I totally see that. Even the, well, maybe especially the kind of production of her biggest albums that has very much just sort of quintessential early 70s production techniques.
I got Tapestry on LP like right when we started talking about it. Yeah. I don't know what had happened to my copy. I had it sometime years ago, but I got it again. So anyway.
You have, are you, anything that you can talk about that you're working on right now that you're excited about or finishing up? Or?
Well, let's see. I finished a film recently, a real steamy kind of romance thing called, a drama called On Swift Horses. And that one, Sony Classics bought that up, and it's going to be coming out early next year.
Who's that? Yeah. That's just so we can remember.
Jacob Elordi and oh God.
Jacob Elordi,
Daisy Edgar Jones.
That's right.
There's a bunch of great folks in it. And it's an interesting film. It's a great book too, and they did a good job with adapting it, the screenplay.
Right.
So anyway, yeah, that was a fun one. Actually, another somewhat of a period piece, some 50s kind of stuff, and then some orchestral stuff taking place in the kind of post-war early 50s. So,
Then you, what else? You got one other thing?
I've got several other things. Usually when I'm doing this, I'm so tired that I have to go to my own IMDb page to remember. But no, I just finished up another an Alice and Janie film. That one's going to be doing a festival run in the spring, and it's called Miss You, Love You. That was a really fun project to work on. Almost like a theater piece, and beautifully written by Jim Rash. And then what else? Let's see. And then there are a handful of other ones, and I probably shouldn't talk about most of them.
Yeah,
but I'm doing a thing with local director who I love and worked with before, Beth Harrington. Mm-hmm. We're doing a piece called Our Mr. Matsura. That's a documentary about a Japanese American photographer from the early days of photography, really, like sort of teens, 20s, 30s, who was in the West here and just has like a stunning body of work, amazing person. So,
and you've worked with Beth quite a few times, haven't you?
Yeah, we've done a few things together over the years already. So I like repeat customers.
Yeah, that's good. Awesome. Well, thanks, Mark. Thanks for hanging out for a little bit and talking about your work. Anything else, any shout outs you want to give to anybody or any other?
Just to the True History of Oz.
There you go.
I'm excited for this. So it's beautiful, it's chilling, and those monkeys haunt my nightmares. So
that was the goal.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Thanks, Mark.
And that's our show. My guest today was Mark Orton. And by the way, all the music that you heard in the intros and outros is from The True History of Oz, co-written and produced by myself and Mark Orton.